Well, hi, everybody. It's Kevin Stevenson. Thanks for joining me on I Don't Care today. I think you're going to really enjoy today's guest. I know I did whenever I first met her. We met at the holiday party for Health Wildcatters in Dallas back in December. Margolin, my today's guest, was there as basically their artist in residence. She had many of her beautiful art pieces on display for those folks who came to the event. And as Ann and I got to talking, I learned so much more about her. And she is much more than an artist. She's a businesswoman. She's a community leader in Dallas, a philanthropist, and of course, an artist. One of the more fascinating things that I found out about Ann, not only was she a Dallas City Councilwoman, she was also the first female board chair for the Dallas County Hospital District. And for you healthcare nerds, I'm sure you already know, that's Parkland Hospital, which is the safety net hospital for Dallas County and beyond. So, Ann, welcome to I Don't Care today. When you first served on the Parkland Board and on the Dallas City Council, what core values really guided you when the pressure was high and the right decision had to be made?
Let me address them separately because they're two different situations. At the city, I was representing constituents. So I represented a district, District 13, that had about 85,000 residents. And so those constituents watched what I did. They liked it. They didn't like it. They pressured me. I had to decide whether I was aligned with them or not and how much to let their pressure guide me and how much to let what I thought was right guide me. And sometimes they were off. It was very often that they were aligned. A really good example. Zoning cases tend to be contentious. Zoning cases are when you change the use of land from one purpose to another. We have Ursuline Academy, a Catholic girls' school in my district, and they were champions in private school girls' soccer, but they didn't have a soccer field on their campus. So they were borrowing everybody else's and they wanted to put one in the front yard. There was just enough room. Well, the neighbors went crazy. They did not want this soccer field. Too much traffic, too much lighting. Lighting's going to be in my backyard. It's going to keep me up all night. All this stuff. What I did bit by bit was try to work through with the school and with their engineers and their designers to as much as possible satisfy the neighbors. So, for example, we required that the lighting only cast light down, scoreboard be in the back and not visible from the streets, that bleachers could only seat 100 people. And then I found out that they really only needed to use it 29 nights a year. And so bit by bit, we tried to satisfy as much as we could of what the neighbors wanted. In the end, they were not happy. They still didn't want it. But 2 years later, after it was built and had been running for a year, I was off the council. My successor, Jennifer Staubach Gates, I ran into her one day and I said, "How's the soccer field doing? How's it going? Have you gotten any complaints?" She said, "Not one." And so sometimes you can split the difference and make it come out all right. But the issue is, you know, often what do I do when I'm in that situation and the neighbors are vehemently against something? I think it's really fine. And there were times when I went against my neighbors and that was really hard to do.
You know, and it's so funny that you brought that up because I'm actually on the zoning board here in Waco. It's so interesting how contentious a fence can be or something like that. We use similar value sets because there are sometimes that I understand their position, but in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really fit in with the city ordinances or whatever. I've had some really heated discussions walking out because people will wait for you. You know, they'll wait for you after those board meetings. And why did you not? So I love that example.
It can be difficult. And so you're really weighing what's best for the neighborhood, what's best for the neighbors, what's best mm-hmm. for the city, what's best for the budget. All those kinds of things come together. And there were times when I wished I could vote 50-50, but that's not possible. So you've got to decide what you're going to do. Parkland, the poll was a little different because there were no constituents per se. I mean, you could say the patients were. But what I used to try to look at was what is best for the patient and what is best for the taxpayer. Because Parkland is on your property tax bill. Their money comes from Medicare, Medicaid, government programs, insurance, and property taxes. It's a small amount on your property tax bill, but it's there. You know, the question to me was, how do we best use our money? How do we tax as little as possible and get as much out of it as we can? We had the option to shift funds once a budget was passed, but we couldn't ever overspend our budget because it wasn't there. We could go into reserves, but you really didn't want to do that. Yeah, everything, it's just balancing, 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 trying to do what you think is best.
That's exactly right. And on a much smaller scale, I was on a local school board there in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Same thing. We could not overspend our budget, and we had to make a lot of very difficult decisions. Based upon the allocation that we receive, not only through local tax revenue, but from state monies as well. It's funny, I tell people I've been in, I think, the two most emotional industries possible, public education and healthcare. And people can be very irrational in their desires regarding both. Because public education, you're dealing with people's kids. Healthcare, you're dealing with people in their most vulnerable state. So let's talk a little bit more about Parkland. And for those of you in my audience who are not, you know, Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas folks, you know, Parkland is a massive, massive monolith of healthcare in Dallas and has been there for well over 100 years. We talk about it as being the Dallas County Safety Net Hospital, but actually it goes well beyond that. Many other counties contract with Dallas County, with Parkland, for their indigent care and everything else. Let's talk a little bit about safety net healthcare. And, you know, oftentimes it's discussed in budgets and utilization, but talk about, you know, that there's still that patient and community experience that you got to integrate into how that care is delivered.
Sometimes it actually is possible to be creative. Mostly it's not, but Or maybe we don't see how it's possible to be creative. When I was there, one of the things that we were dealing with was that our number of people in labor and delivery, the number of babies being born, exceeded what we had budgeted for. And this went on for several years. Our CEO at the time, who was very creative, Ron Anderson, worked out an arrangement with the medical school where Parkland and UT Southwestern started a midwife, a nurse midwife program to bring down the cost of deliveries. Nurse midwives did probably 80% of the deliveries at that time. There were always doctors available, but it brought down our costs in labor and delivery by about 20% overall. As you said, you're dealing with finite resources. You know, how do you care for patients when you have cost overruns in the pharmacy? Or at the time that I was there, we had nursing shortages. We ended up recruiting overseas. We went to Ireland. Their nursing programs were more or less equivalent to ours. We had overruns at the time because in the pharmacy, because it was in the middle of the AIDS epidemic. Mm-hmm. We had not anticipated what the pharmaceuticals were going to cost. Sometimes you just have to stretch it. You know, we ended up, unfortunately, with longer ER waits, trying to cut back as best we could on medications. I mean, it was really a difficult situation, and it was a very difficult couple of years.
Yeah. You have to reallocate your resources. I was in a kind of a different area of healthcare back during the AIDS epidemic. I was in the freestanding physical rehabilitation side. But we did see that here recently with the pandemic, with COVID. We had to reallocate resources because we didn't know what was going to happen, you know, sometimes hour to hour. People always would say, oh, as a hospital administrator during the pandemic, it's got to be incredibly stressful. And I said, okay, please don't take this wrong, but I've got to be honest with you. It's been kind of fun. And I meant fun in the global point. Of it being, we have to be so creative. You know, we were doing things that 6 months before we would never have done because of regulations. It wasn't because it wasn't safe for patients. But, you know, you and I both know healthcare is one of the most regulated industries in our country. And so we were limited in what we were able to do. However, with those regulations being relaxed, we were able to, as I said, reallocate resources, do other things, you know, just to make sure that we took care of patients. And we did. And people were safe. And so I think, you know, just the ability to be creative in your thinking and to, you know, like what you said, what Dr. Anderson was doing back, you know, recruiting nurses from England and Ireland. You know, I know in the past we recruited from the Philippines. You know, you've got to think outside the box.
Another thing that we did that really worked out well, although we hesitated for so long to do it, and that was we were having excessive utilization of the emergency room because people would come there because they had let their primary care, what should have been primary care issues, get out of hand. And so people with high blood pressure or other ailments would let it go and let it go and let it go and then turn up in the ER. And this went on for years. Once again, Dr. Anderson had been reading about something called community-oriented primary care clinics, COPC clinics. You know, when you think of hospital clinics, you think of somebody shows up and they get seen by a doctor and, you know, they'll get prescribed whatever. But this was much more involved because people had their own doctors. The model was that it was very much like someone who had private insurance. You were assigned a doctor. If you were a mom with a kid, your child got assigned a pediatrician. You made appointments. You came as scheduled. And the idea was not just to serve people, but to use it also to measure outcomes. Did blood pressure go down in these two zip codes? And it did. But at the beginning, our board was very afraid to implement this because we thought now people are going to flock to the clinics and we're not going to be able to afford it. In the end, it balanced out. We reduced usage of the emergency room and we had a healthier two zip codes. During my term as chair, we funded the first three clinics. There are now about 22 or 23.
You've got to think creatively, but doing something like that. And I look at Parkland, obviously, and other safety net hospitals a little bit differently than I did, you know, the private hospitals, because you are truly trying to make that impact on community health. I mean, that was population health organizations were really the Parklands and the John Peter Smiths in Fort Worth and things like that. And so to be able to think creatively and do something like the community clinics, you really can make an impact. The people that Parkland tends to serve are looking for better health education. So to be able to bring that out in a community where it's more locally based, you know, is certainly a wonderful solution to ER overcrowding that we all face. Let's move into, I don't want to discount your art by any means because it's beautiful, it's fascinating. Your transition from healthcare governance to city leadership to becoming an artist is really compelling. So what drew you towards art and how did your healthcare experience really shape that?
I was always drawn toward art. I mean, I've always gone to museums and galleries and just admired and appreciated art. I'm not sure that my experience with healthcare or city governance really fed into it. I think I just had this need for a creative outlet, and because
I've been stress relief, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, you know, I would say I was ready for a change. It wasn't so much a change because it's not like I've changed 100% and now I'm a full-time artist. I'm a part-time artist and I'm still very involved in things in the community. But I did want to sort of feed what felt like a need for my creative outlet. So I took up painting and, you know, took lessons and private lessons and group lessons and just started doing it. It has been very satisfying. You know, it's interesting too, because maybe I'm getting out ahead on another topic, but it's related. The flip side of that I see is what an impact art has on healthcare and art has on the community. I think art is healing. And art, whether consciously or unconsciously, makes people feel better. to be around it. When I was on the city council, I chaired the Arts, Culture, and Libraries Committee. The commitments that we made as a city was that when we spent bond money on buildings and building renovations, that we spent 1.5% on art, public art. You know, if we built or renovated a rec center, there's either art in the rec center, there may be a statue of some kind in front of the rec center, libraries, all of our public buildings now, as they come online, have art. You know, also at UT Southwestern, their hospitals are full of art. I don't know if you've ever had occasion to go into them.
I have.
Clemens Hospital. The thing that I love about what they do there is that their art is almost exclusively, or maybe entirely exclusively, Texas artists. So they're supporting local artists, which I think is really wonderful. There is a philanthropist who's deceased, Margaret McDermott, approached to make a major contribution to Clemens and back further many years earlier to Zale Lipschy Hospital. Her response was, "I'll give you money for art," because nobody else was going to do that. She did it, and it's made a big difference.
Yeah, I know. I know for us at my previous hospital, we spent a lot of time, obviously, on patient experience. And one of those things is, you know, the healing environment. And as you said, art is such a major part of it. Yeah. You know, when people come into a hospital, as I said earlier, it's the worst day of their lives, you know, either for themselves or their loved ones or whatever. And so trying to do something to make it as calm as possible. And art allows people to immerse themselves into that for a period of time to allow them to at least get away from the chaos of that time for just a little while. Previously, at one of my hospitals about 20 years ago, we were building what we call the Healthy Living Center. And we spent a lot of time on the aesthetics. You know, not only art, but we were creating water features, created a healing music for that space. And it made such a huge difference for the patients because it just basically, you know, the art, the healing, the environment just calmed them down and allowed them to become more focused on themselves and their own healing journey.
I didn't know about healing music. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it was really fascinating. I got to work with a composer on that. And this was a hospital in Nebraska. It was kind of interesting. Our area was in the migratory pattern of the sandhill crane. There is a very distinctive call that the sandhill crane does. She integrated that call into the music that she wrote. And so, like you said, you know, Parkland supported, or UT Southwestern supported local artists. Her music made people feel like, hey, I'm at home. It was an incredible experience for everybody.
It's really wonderful. You know, another place in Dallas that we have tons of public art is Love Field. That's a more modern renovation.
I frequent Love Field. My wife's a flight attendant for Southwest. And so we fly on Love Field almost exclusively.
Yeah, that was under the 1.5% rule.
Yeah. And you know, we do get to see a lot of airports in our travels. And Love Field to me is, you know, you bring up a good point. Love Field is one of the more calmer airports because of that. And it's just calming. So, you know, we've kind of integrated healthcare into art, and I love that. But let's talk a little bit more about, especially for people who feel burned out or disconnected from their original purpose, their original why they got into healthcare or any industry. What would you say about reconnecting with purpose and creativity? How can that be integrated into someone's journey?
For me, it's about kind of unplugging in some way. I can unplug while I'm making art. I have a friend who just recently, out of nowhere, took up with her husband ballroom dancing.
Oh.
I mean, it's almost like just do something different. If you tend to stay home a lot, figure out how to go out more. If you go out a lot, figure out how to stay home more. Just shaking it up, I think, makes a big difference. It doesn't have to be dramatic. It doesn't have to be, you know, hiking in the Himalayas, Kilimanjaro, why not, right? Spend a week in a place you've always wanted to go.
I think it allows you to, as you said, to unplug, but it helps rewire your brain. Doing something that you haven't done before and doing something totally out of character for you, is interesting. When I retired from my last hospital back in the late summer, I'm like, okay, you know, I know what I'm going to do from a consultancy standpoint, but what other things can I do? I took up Tai Chi. That is, has never been me. I'm like, okay, what are we talking about? But I started doing Tai Chi. I'm like, okay, this is incredible. Not only is it calming and you're thinking in those slow movements, how can that make an impact? I will be honest with you. That first week after I started, I was more sore than I was when I used to work out because of the intentionality. But what I'm saying is just doing something different that fits for you can help kind of reconnect you with your purpose and why you got into whatever, you know, vocation you chose or whatever.
I totally agree. And that's been helpful to me. And in my case, it's been painting, but it could be whatever it is, whatever you want it to be.
I've had the good fortune to see many of your works and they're lovely. You're not a starving artist. Are you selling some of your work?
Happy to sell my art.
How could people find your art and maybe take some of that home with it?
I have a website, annemargolin.com.
That's easy.
Easy as can be. Take a look at that. And if you see something that's of interest, reach me at ann@annemargolin.com. Or my phone number is on the website. You can call me or text me.
That's easy. We can, you know, I'm happy to promote that as well. So, Ann, in our last couple of minutes, anything that you'd like to say in closing about your incredible history of your life, you know, as a community leader in Dallas, my hometown, some of the other things that you've been involved in?
I guess what I can say is that working on community issues and being in a leadership role is something that has been just incredibly satisfying to me. I mean, it can be incredibly frustrating. It can be incredibly difficult. Something I've always been drawn to. My current commitment is to Dallas College, which is our community college system. Vice chair of the board of the Dallas College Foundation, which is in the middle of a $140 million campaign, can serve students in better ways and get a higher percentage of them through to completion and transference to, if they want to, four-year schools. That's a lot of what I'm doing now. It's just always been appealing. And I encourage people to, if you think you're inclined that way, just jump in and find a way to get involved because you're needed. You're always needed. That's for sure.
Well, that's so true. I really agree with that. Many of us have been very blessed in our lives, in our careers, and the ability to be able to give back to our communities. We should always take full advantage of that.
Yeah.
Because someone along the way certainly poured into us and gave us opportunities. And we should be able to do the same thing for others.
One of the things I've wanted to do, and I haven't yet, is tutor or mentor probably high school kids. And that's sort of still on my to-do list. I would like to do that.
You just started a whole new podcast topic that I've talked about before on mentorship, because I've loved doing that within the healthcare industry. Maybe once you get that under your belt, you can come back on and talk about that too. And it's been a real pleasure having you on I Don't Care today. I've really enjoyed it. I know our audience did. You've had, again, such a life well lived in a broad spectrum of ways. And so thank you for sharing that with my audience.
Well, you're welcome. And thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. Well, folks, once again, we wrapped up another episode of I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. I thank you so much for joining me, and we will see you again next time. Take care.